Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Christine Williams.
It's the midweek show of Fiber Talk, the thing we do twice weekly for people who play with needles.
Yes, and or yes. People who love people who play with needles. I think we're going to open it up a little bit.
Oh, expanding the audience.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, because how else do you understand and know what our life is like? This is a good way.
People who love people who play with needles.
Right.
A
it's sort of like
layer.
Children. Yeah, it's like Children of Alcoholics, but like the good kind.
Yeah, it's just like that. It's just like
it's
that.
Like, right, it's like Al-Anon. It's like Al-Anon, but like the nice version.
Yeah, it's just like that. Uh-huh.
I don't know. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, okay. In Christine world, yes.
Okay. I never said Christine world was like average, so.
Okay, I'm writing that one down. That's good. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's gonna be great. Okay, so yeah, that's going on a sippy cup. Now, already we've had interest in the sippy cup, the Fiber Talk sippy
yes,
cup.
I'm so excited.
Yes, and Fiber Talk merch. So now, you know, I feel like now we got to deliver now. So.
Oh, I'm down with this. This is happening. This is already
sippy
happening.
Sippy cup, teacup, or coffee mug, T-shirt.
Yes. Yes, we can do that. And actually, what's funny is, so for the sippy cup, I found it's actually a travel coffee mug that is difficult to spill, and it's really easy to like close up and open up with one hand, so you can, you know, you can knock it over pretty well. And I know that because I've knocked it over a lot, because I have it with another design on it from something. Another hobby of mine. But what do you use for an Oort bowl?
My Oort bowl is not fair. I have an Oort bowl from a guy in North Carolina, I think, a wood turning master. No, I've got this. Yeah. So I'm not fair. But then the Oort bowl, when I empty the Oort bowl, is a jam jelly jar.
Mm-hmm.
So I go from the most exquisite wood to just cheap glass.
Right. Because I have what I actually found. I have a friend who does pottery, and she does teacups, and she knows me pretty well. So she's made me a couple of these teacups that are completely wonky. So they're not symmetrical at all. And, you know, they're, you know, twisted a little funny. They're almost like Alice in Wonderland teacups. Right.
Okay.
So they're not great for drinking tea out of because they're a little wonky, but for this, they're absolutely perfect because they're beautiful, and a little weird and a little kind of off kilter and not perfect.
How many can she make? Cause I'm smelling a demand for that.
I think that there could be, I will have to talk to her. You know what I'm going to do is I will post on our Instagram. I'll ask her permission first. I'm going to post a picture of mine first. And then if she gives me permission, I'll post sort of a mishmash of other ones that she's done, because she makes mugs for other people that are more traditional, like pottery type mugs.
Mm-hmm.
But I really dig these little Alice in Wonderland kind of wonky,
yes.
teacups. And the thing is that now it sits next to me all the time. So it's special to me because it's my friend Debbie's cup that she made, and I get to see it every single day. So that's my Oort mug.
Okay.
So,
all right. We got a list. I'm making a list right here. Fiber Talk merch.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Fiber Talk merch.
Okay. Coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Let's hold the rest of the ideas so somebody doesn't thievery us on that. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
starting to get subscribers on FlossTube. Now putting up all of the podcasts on FlossTube. And I'm learning how to put in still images. It's so much easier to do a video where you record the video and the sound together as a movie, but putting in these still images and not having Premiere Pro distort the heck out of them has become a real challenge, but I'm getting there. I'll figure it out. But regardless, the soundtrack is there. So FlossTube Fiber Talk is your search, and then subscribe to us there and get us in your list of things you listen to while stitching. So that's fun. And we have the attic tour of the attic samplers. That video's there. And, Christine, you don't even know this. I just set up with my friend Mary McGuire. In the next week or so, we're going to do a video of Mary's 10 favorite stitches.
Oh, how cool.
So, yes. So Mary is putting that together now, figuring out what her 10 stitches are, and we'll get to see some of her gorgeous stitching as examples. And then, so we'll talk about her 10 favorite stitches, pros, cons, threads to use, threads to not use, that kind of stuff. So that video coming up. Yes. Let's see. Oh, I finished the Shepherd's Bush stocking for Cooper. Worked out really well. I'm telling you what, if you want to make a stocking, you want to make a nice, good size stocking, you don't want to spend half your life stitching it, and you want it to look really neat when you're done, these Shepherd's Bush stockings, this thing finished up really nice. It's, the next day or so, it'll be on its way to Vanna for finishing. But, yeah, I got it all done, and, there's a package of, little embellishment things that come with it. And so, like, there's a train on the bottom of the thing, and there's a little bell that hangs off the roof of the caboose of the train, and there's a wreath that goes on one of the cars has a present in it, and so a wreath goes on there, and all kinds of things. And it just, when you put those in, it really adds a nice little touch to it, and I'm really, really pleased with it. So the one for Connor, grandson Connor, the new baby, is that's next on the rack. So the goal is both by Christmas. I've done that terrible thing I said I'd never do again, which is stitch under pressure, but I'm
yeah,
doing it.
Well, we all do that sometimes.
Yeah, for the babies.
And I have to say that post on Instagram is, I think, one of the ones that we've gotten the most feedback on, I have to say.
Yes, I think so.
Of your, the shepherds, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, and so there's a rack of them. I think they do one every year, but yeah, I really highly recommend, because the chart is like $8. I think that's all the chart is $8, and then the little package is usually around $20, which is kind of way out of proportion. But you don't have to buy the package of little ornament things to hang off of it. You'll get a nice looking stocking just on its own. But yeah, so it's not like you have to invest a lot. The one I did for Cooper is all done in number 5 pearl. The one I'm doing for Connor is just about all number 5 pearl. So you're not dealing with a bunch of strands and laying tools and stuff. And it's just X's, and you just stitch. And, and they just come out really nice. They really do. So, yeah, highly recommended. Yep. And linen.
What's your problem with linen?
Creases. I can see why people get frustrated. So I have the stocking I did, it's like 24, 28 count linen, which is, you know, essentially burlap. And the piece I got for Cooper's stocking had been rolled. It had not been folded. So I didn't have to deal with any creases. But the one I got, the piece I got for Connor, came off of a thing that had been folded. So last night I had 3 pieces of linen, that one and 2 40, 50 count pieces that had all been folded and had creases. And so the 26 or 8 count, whatever it is, burlap, that ironed out pretty well. Just taking a linen dishcloth, wetting it several times, and then just ironing with a dry hot iron. I think that one's going to be fine. But then the other 2 pieces of linen, I'm going to have to go to I ironed them. I thought it was good. I let them dry, checked before we started recording, and you can still see where the wrinkles were. So I think I'm going to have to do a Mary Corbett recipe. That's Mary Corbett with 1 T. Recipe where she completely soaks them, and I don't know what else she does, and then I'm going to have to iron it. But I didn't want to, because she does it to take the shrink, you know, to get them to shrink so that they don't shrink if they're washed later. And, so I got to do a little more research, but the one big piece is for a sampler, and those wrinkles are going to show because, you know, they're just not covered all the way. And, so I got to figure that out. And then the other piece is a small piece for just playing with. And so, but it's a good piece to learn on how to, people do it. People get rid of all the wrinkles. But I think I'm actually going to have to submerge them in water and get them thoroughly wet. And then iron it out that way to get those wrinkles to go away. So
what, okay. So this may be like the worst idea ever. What is your opinion on starch? Because usually when I'm ironing things and I have issues with it, a little bit of spray starch is helpful.
Now that I don't know, because the research I did, nobody mentioned. I keep track of these things through the years reading them, and then I went and did mm-hmm. some research, and there was no mention of starch anywhere. I don't know if you want starch on linen like that when you're stitching with silk. I don't know.
I don't know either. So yeah. I'd be curious to see what people's experience is with that. Because if anything, so I'm thinking if I had to guess, and I'm sure somebody's tried it and I'd like to know, I don't know that I would starch silk, but on linen, it would just give it a little bit of heft and body and structure. Which
I meant dragging silk through starched.
No, I know. So I'm thinking only because I happen to be sitting next to a piece of silk that's in an embroidery hoop. But silk is pretty easy to iron out wrinkles. Linen is just a bear. So for linen clothing, I always use spray starch just because it makes it easier to get that and because it gives it a little bit of structure. Just in clothing. So if I'm stitching like clothing out of linen, I use starch all the time because it makes it wiggle less. So and what I mean by wiggle is it makes it stay square easier.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to use it on silk because the starch would show up on silk. Right. It would accumulate and you'd see it. But on linen, you don't. So if anybody knows of any reason why that's a terrible idea, I'd be curious to know. And I, you know, the easy answer to this is just take a tiny piece of linen and spray starch it and see what happens. And you don't have to use a lot, but certainly right. just enough that, or just spray water and iron it that yeah. way. But starch is like my magical ironing tool.
Right. Yeah. I just, I mean, this one that I'm going to use for a sampler, I mean, it was, you know, it's a, it was an expensive piece of little piece of linen.
Right. You don't want to screw it up.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. Yeah, I'm nervous. So, but I think, I'm going to have to just get it completely soaked and then iron it out and make it go away.
This is when you go to the Hive Mind of Needlepoint Nation or the Fiber Talk Facebook page, which I have used many times before. When I have a question about something that is, I just don't know what to do. I usually throw it out there and see because somebody has done it. So somebody will know what to do.
Well, see, my hesitation is it's one of those questions that has been asked and answered 100 times. And,
right.
and so I did a search, but Facebook search within groups, not the best. And, so I spent about a half hour searching for posts I'd read before and came up dry. So then I just went to the greater interneters and the Google
yeah.
and found some things. And then I just soaked a towel, put it over the linen and hit it with the iron as much as I could and then let it dry. But yeah, it just isn't, I got to get those. I mean, it's flat, but it's like they're ghost wrinkles. You can see the wrinkles and
yeah,
it's just not gone away. So yeah, I got to deal with that, but, I'll be able to start the next stocking. That crease, which is pretty much right down the middle, that is pretty much disappeared. So mm-hmm. I'll be fine on that. And, you know, stretched out on the scroll bars, it'll go away. So I'm not too worried about it. So yeah. Yep. But anyway, yeah, I wish that Facebook search within groups worked better because it sure would help, but, it doesn't. So I have to, okay, this one is a really good tip. All right, here we go. You know, everybody take a deep breath. Here we go. This comes from Jane Wood's Chilly Hollow Needlepoint Adventure in Place of Much Temptation for People Who Play with Needles. Oh, wait a minute. What's she doing? She changed her name and she took from us now. Oh, come on, Jane.
I think she did it just to tweak you because she knows that it would.
Oh, she did that. All right,
yep.
Now we're going to have that conversation.
She did it.
All right. Well, anyway, from that website to her friends known as Blog. But, you know, we like to be formal here. Okay, anyway, so she posted she called it a clever tip for the counted crowd. And the spinster stitcher, Connie Rich, who, if you don't follow the spinster stitcher, you know, get on it. But, and this is from Miss Joyce in her library guild. She has all these guilds, and she calls them like the library guild and the, you know, grocery store guild and whatever. It's just where they meet. I don't know what the real name is. It's just where they meet is how she labels them. But anyway, this Miss Joyce, and Connie Rich was working on, Needle Delight's Originals Popper chart, which is a whole bunch of squares, and each square, I don't know, maybe an inch and a half, on a side, and it's a different stitch and a different thread. And it's a neat little package, and so you just stitch these one, you know, inch and a half by inch and a half squares in one thread, one type of thread, and do one stitch, and then you move on to the next one. And so you can imagine the chart for that, you know, with the stitch guy, or, you know, how to stitch, and then how to fill it in. Well, what Connie did, because Miss Joyce suggested to her, was copy the chart and then cut out the square that she's stitching and attach that to her canvas so that you don't have to keep looking back to the printed chart. It's right there on your canvas.
Oh my goodness, that's the best thing ever.
You know, how obvious and simple and elegant, but yeah, why didn't everybody think of that?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So that's just excellent. So then you can start to see if you have a challenging stitch to just copy and cut out the diagram for that and post it right there on your, you know, just tape it, glue it, pin it, whatever. Don't glue it. Pin it or, you know, something like that right on your stretcher bars or whatever, or just tack it on there. And mm-hmm. then you don't have to keep looking off of your canvas to see how to do the stitch. So
you could even magnet it.
Yeah. If magnet were a verb, you could do that. Yes.
It is now. I just did. Made it a verb, you know, which is funny because I do a lot of editing and proofreading and English work. And so I really hate when people make up words like that and take, right. But so I just did it. I just broke my own rule.
You just magnet it. Okay.
I just magnet. Yeah. But there isn't a verb for that. If you use a magnet, right.
Yes,
so the same way that you'd use a needle minder, right?
Yes.
I would do the same thing. Just use your needle minder and just put another magnet on the front.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Agreed. Yes. Right.
It's been a long day, Gary.
You can do that, yes. If Maggie, yeah. Well, and I'm getting an extra laugh out of it because I was editing a press release this morning where somebody made a verb out of the word baseline.
Oh, well, that's a common thing. So in business language.
No,
yeah,
no.
So, Gary.
No, it's not a verb. Period.
Both of us by, and it's funny because so you are actually an editor. I am not an editor at all, yet I do a lot of editing of copy, advertising copy and things of that nature. And I read a lot of business emails. So I read a lot of, you know, the trendy business speak. So my favorite, this is completely off topic now. My favorite, misuse of a word that didn't need to be made was the word when someone needed to make a decision, right? So have you figured out if you're going to have vanilla or chocolate? And the answer in an email was, that has not been decisioned yet.
Please, really?
Yes. This sentence, okay. The sentence was written by a Harvard MBA graduate.
Okay.
And so, of course, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't let that go because, you know.
No.
Like, that we kind of have, so magnet, there isn't another word for that, right? So I just made up that word and I'm also being funny, you know, I'm intentionally being a little silly. That was done in all seriousness. And so I said, do you know, we do have a verb for that. It's decide.
Yes.
You don't have to make it into a noun and then back into another verb. Right. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, the language comes with that verb, yes.
Uh-huh. Right. We already have that. So now everybody knows what the one pet peeve that Gary and I share is, the ruination of the English language.
Yes. Oh, yes. Don't even start me. Don't even start me. Yep. Okay, so that's excellent from Connie Rich, but then it reminded me, Pam Tanner, who we have not heard from her blog in some time, also known as the X-Stitch Addict, she is a sampler stitching machine. And so she's one to follow because she does stamp, she just cranks them out like a factory. But anyway, she was doing, she had a sampler that required some freehand stitching. Leaves and vines and flowers and that kind of stuff. And she was uncomfortable because she wasn't sure she was going to get the quality, the look that she wanted and that should be there. So what she did was similar to what Connie did. She took and copied the diagram from the chart. And then what she did was she attached that to the proper spot. She put in basting lines and everything else to line it up so that it would line up across the sampler and vertically and all those things. And then she attached the copy of the outline for this freehand section. And then using just a regular sewing needle, a pointed sewing needle, and she started out with sewing thread, but then she learned that if she used hand quilting thread, that it doesn't fray and it pulls out easier. She stitched through paper and through linen all of the lines. And then using cuticle scissors, cut out all the paper, pulled out all the paper, and what's left is the lines that you need to stitch to guide your stitching for freehand stitching for this vine. If well, that all makes sense. And I thought that was pretty cool.
That is.
Yes. And so I have a link. I'll put a link on the page for this midweek show to the first time that she did it. And then she shows several subsequent reports on this sampler and she shows different areas where she has this paper attached and she's using it as a stitch guide. And I thought that was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
Way to do it. But then, as I'm describing this, I'm thinking, wait a minute, why not just use the same copy and use one of the many techniques for applying a design to embroidery? Like surface embroidery, Mary Corbett with 1T has several techniques you can use for transferring a pattern to linen or muslin or whatever it is for embroidery stitching. And so you could do that too. So there's some ways to do it. But Pam just had a really simple way. And then you have that thread right there. And then when you're done stitching, you just pull it out. And I thought that was really good too.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. So what I've been doing, so I've been dabbling in a lot of things lately, needlework things. That sounded very nefarious and not like what I wanted it to. So I've been doing a lot lots of needlework. So I have like five different projects going on and I pick them up depending on my mood and my degree of how complicated I want to be at that moment, right? So, right now I'm doing a very, very easy counted cross stitch. I have a crewel work piece done that's, you know, basically printed on linen and you stitch kind of along the lines. The lines are very general representations and you just do crewel stitching and then you rinse it. But I'm also doing some surface embroidery in preparation for stump work. And that one is completely freehand. So that's going into the wild world of, you know, it's the opposite of like a counted needlepoint charted piece. So for that, I'm either tracing or freehand drawing designs on, like butcher's paper or parchment paper. And then drawing on the reverse of it with a pencil and then putting that on the silk that I'm going to be stitching on and then tracing it over with a pen. And that just transfers a pencil onto the silk.
Yes.
And that seems to be working out pretty well. And basically all I'm really going for is just the gist of the lines. And then I go back over with a pencil and add a little bit more detail and sort of guidelines of, you know, especially areas that need to be, what's the word? It's not stitch painted. It's not needle painted. Anyway, when you blend threads together,
long short stitch, you mean?
Long and short stitch. Right. There's different ways to do it. So basically silk shading. When I'm doing that, sometimes I'll draw, guidelines just to kind of give, especially if you're doing it like not on a straight line. If I'm doing, so for example, a flower petal is on an angle, right? It's a fan shape. So to give myself an idea, just so that it starts even and so that you don't end up doing the whole thing in one direction and end up with a corner, I'll draw sort of a fan, just throw in a couple of pencil lines that, you know, they all get covered up. So I've been doing that. But one thing that I had read in one of the books that I was reading that was kind of a cool idea, and anything that keeps pieces clean, I'm discovering for me is a good idea, is covering the piece when you put it into the hoop with saran wrap and then just tearing away the saran wrap in the area that you're stitching, because that way you're covering all of the open canvas that your hands are going to touch, your fingers are going to touch, everything is going to touch. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, but you can still see the whole design or the whole area.
You still see the whole design, right. And you're just tearing away. And then as you go, you know, obviously the areas that you've stitched are now exposed, but at least that open canvas is actually pretty good shape, right? Because it hasn't been really exposed. And the other thing that I saw that was kind of cool, I'm trying to think of where I saw this. I was looking at, because I'm looking to buy a floor stand, because I'm now at the point of, utter frustration of working. I'm not working in hand, but I'm working in a hoop in hand, and it's just too slow. Right. And I know that I'd be able to move a lot faster if I had it in a frame where I could work better double handed, right? So, what somebody had done was they made, and I think you can buy these too. I think I saw them on Nordic Needle, stretchy. If you can imagine, the old, they're like 1970s steering wheel covers.
Right.
They're like
plasticky,
right? So you can buy those, and they basically stretch around the edge of your either stretcher bars or your embroidery, hoop, so that the edge that your hand is touching is covered.
Right.
And I kind of like that too. And the other thing is that it covers the edge of the fabric that tends to fray. So I know to most people, you know, that they're thinking, well, yeah, that's been around forever. but to me, yeah. I was like, wow, that's a good idea. I kind of like that. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, for those who don't know, yeah, those things exist. And there's one advertises a needlepoint now, Casey's Underwear or something, where I think she takes old underwear of different kinds and makes those kinds of covers. Yeah, for fun.
Yeah, whatever. But,
yeah, that's,
Or like old shower caps, if you travel a lot, right? And you go to hotels and they have shower caps. You can use the shower caps to cover your work when you're not using it. That's kind of a cool one. I like that one too.
Hmm.
That would have prevented my cat incident. Basically what it is I'm recognizing and owning up to the fact that I'm not I'm a little clumsy and I'm a little careless. And so, I'm putting in lots of different stopgap measures to prevent accidents from happening.
Yes. Yes. Well, but you clearly need to do that. There's, you know, that's now well established, I'm really careful, yet I go to great lengths to keep, when I'm not stitching, to keep things covered up. I mean, I cover the bucket or the basket I use to keep all my threads for a project in. That gets covered up when I'm done. I go to great lengths to make sure that dust and dirt stay off of whatever I'm stitching, no matter what. And, you know, if it's on my scroll bars, it gets covered up whenever I'm done with it. It get covered with plastic, or I use those cotton handkerchiefs that I talked about a few weeks ago to cover. And no, I think it's worth it, because I really, quite frankly, when I get done with a piece, the last thing I want to do is stick it in water because it got dirty. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's disappointing when you watch as a piece is developing. And you start seeing it get a little dingy, you know?
Yeah.
I see, you know, because again, I'm starting this as a beginner. So I'm looking at it saying, well, how bad could it really be? You know, my hands are clean. I'm, you know, wiping my hands down and cleansing my hands. But now I see why, you know, why the Royal School has people stitch with cotton gloves.
Right.
I get it now. Like I have entertained the idea that maybe that's a good idea because, or, you know, just not leaving my workaround where other people can get
it. Would be that.
Or where I can spill things on them, you know? So yeah, I have to be a little bit more careful. And really it's my own, the only person I'm hurting is me because I spill something or I do something and I say, wow, that was not good. So. But again, any of the pieces that I'm working on now are more experimental kind of, I'm just learning something. So it's not like it's a family heirloom that I'm worried about.
Right. So. I'm thinking that a stop frame video of you stitching over the, say, the course of a week would be some pretty good visual entertainment.
I don't think so.
Yeah, contorted on the couch, spilling things, cat vomit. Yeah, I think we would have something there.
That was one time and I was really sick. So, yeah. No, right. So right now, and so I have finally come to the conclusion that this, where I am sat right now is not working for me anymore. So
where I am sat. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where I am sat right now.
Jeez.
Quiet up, editor man. It's 10 p.m. at our time right now. Just like to put that out there after working a 10-hour day at a real job and having a child. So let's just put this in context.
So we're gonna play all the cards now. Okay,
all the cards.
Okay, haul them all out. Okay.
So I'm in my living room. I'm in my living room and I'm on sort of the chaise part of a couch. So I have my knees crunched up underneath me and my canvas is sort of propped up on my knees and I have my light pulled down in front of me and my chart is on the arm next to me and my threads are on the couch on the other side and there may or may not be a beverage on the table sort of far away.
You're telling me that doesn't make good visual entertainment? I'm thinking. Yeah.
It's not ideal. It's not ideal.
No, so, that's a good movie. That's a good movie right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, right. So that's the next step is, and really the question, and really my only hesitation, is do I buy an inexpensive stand that I may use for a little while and then say this was a dumb idea and, or do I just buy a good stand once and be happy with it? Because everything that all of you have told me is that a good stand will make your life a lot easier and a good stand you will have for the rest of your life. So this seems to me like one of those things that you purchase once and then you're very, very happy with it forever. So I'm leaning towards spending the money and getting a really good stand because this is something that I'm going to be doing a lot of, and I would like to be comfortable, and I will get better faster having the right kind of tools. So
you answered your own question.
Yeah.
Buy cheap, yeah. You buy twice. So.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
And then the other thing that I would like to do is to get a travel sort of sitting stand to be able to go. Not, I guess that's not a stand, right? But sort of like exactly what you have that you posted pictures of, where you. Sit on it, and then it's just an arm that you clamp your work to.
Right. It goes in a suitcase, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I kind of need both because I move around a lot. I'm at, you know, different places, and I stitch a lot of different places. So I do need a good setup for home, but I do also need something that I can take with me. So those are my next infrastructure items.
Buy good ones. Buy good ones.
I think that's what I'm going to do.
Yep, it's just that. Just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. They're in the September, October Needlepoint Now is an article. I'll probably butcher this name. Connie Lynn Borserine. I think that sounds good. From the Judge's Corner. Now I always read this, but she started a new thing, 10 ways to improve your needlework. And I'm telling you, if you're not a subscriber, get the Needlepoint Now. But even if you don't want to buy the Needlepoint now, get the September-October issue just for this article. And then you're going to want the November-December one because she finishes up. That's what, as a magazine editor, I don't like two-parters because, yeah. But anyway, 10 ways to improve your needlework. So then just two of them stood out for me. Use length of thread to the bitter end. Everybody does that. Sooner or later, everybody uses it. I'll just read the quote. The thread died several measures ago. Stitches should remain consistent in appearance in terms of tension and loft. A proper length of stitching thread will depend on the composition combined with enough span to complete a reasonable number of stitches and allow you to continue to an area in which you can safely bury your thread. And yes, and I used to take them to the bitter end, and you know, as I've said many times, anymore, I don't. But I did. Yes. But I did on this stocking and almost ripped it out because, number 5, pearl cotton, you got to be careful because it wears and it will show if you use a long length. And so when I, number 5 pearl, when you undo the skein, you get a big loop, and then I cut the loop in half, and then I will take one of those lengths and cut it in half, and that's my standard length. And I rarely ever use, I quit way before the end. Well, there's 4 hearts on the bottom of the Shepherd's Bush stocking I did for Cooper. And the way I stitched them is you got the 2 humps at the top of the heart. And so I started at the top of the left hump and came down with the X's to the row that goes across, that will span across to the other hump of the heart. And then I stitched up to the top. Well, by the time I stitched up, that used up the whole length of pearl cotton right down to the nub. Mm-hmm. Like there was enough to bury it, but just barely. And I noticed in the first 2 that you could, if you studied it, you could see that wear and that hump of the right hump of the heart didn't have quite the luster that the left one does. And I almost tarred out, but I'm down to the end. It's these 4 hearts and I'm done. And so I just gritted my teeth and did them all the same because that worked out. And you know, it takes just the right light to see it, but it does make a difference. It does make a difference. And so, it made me conscious because you could really see it in just the right light. And that was, under my magnifier with the LEDs blazing down on it. But then when you hold it in normal light, you really can't tell, but I know it's there, but I'm just kind of living with it. But yeah, this was it, using the length thread, to the bitter end. And, to me, it's, you're not saving that much money. And I think you really, you take away a little bit of the quality of the overall piece, because that, any of the threads wear or fray or whatever. So that was a good one. And then this was interesting. Vertical/upright stitches and slanted stitches. And I'll just read this because it's just an interesting thing. When using both vertical and slanted and they're placed next to each other, vertical stitches can steal space by spreading out to the side and covering up some of their slanted neighbors. So she suggests using multiple strands for the straight stitch, and then when you get next to the stranded or the slanted area, unthread an appropriate number of strands. This, you're stitching the straight stitch now. Unthread and stitch up next to the slanted stitch with less strands. And then as you get, so like you would end a row and then go down to the next one, and you're stitching those last couple of stitches with fewer strands than you stitched before. And then when you get, so you're moving away from the slanted thing, then add those strands back in. Don't cut them off. Just pull them out of the needle, then add them back in and go back to your normal complement of strands and stitch the main body of that area. And I thought that's, one of those, that could work. And no one would be the wiser, and you would end up with a much cleaner line between the slanted and the straight stitch. And so I thought that was a really sophisticated but elegant solution to dealing with that very thing. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So this article, really, really good article. Yeah. Get September, October, Needlepoint Now from the Judge's Corner. Get the magazine anyway, because it's just a good magazine. But Connie Lynn's 10 Ways, and she has others. There's three more in there. I just didn't bring them up. But and then five more are coming in the next issue. But yeah, and that used to the bitter end. And you know, you do that, especially when you start, unless somebody tells you otherwise, you want to use up all the thread because you paid good money for good thread, and you want to use every bit of it. But it's counterproductive. It really is. So, yep.
I think so too. Yeah, you think you're saving, but you end up not actually.
Right. Right. Yeah, the end result, you heard it, yeah. All right, that's going to be it. Sunday is Mary Legolay.
Yes, super fun.
Yes, and, oh, that's right, yes. And you got to listen all the way to the end because you will end up with a good list of TV shows to watch
yes.
while stitching. A really
good list. I was wondering whether or not you would give that away.
Yes.
But
yes.
It's absolutely worth it because we had a whole discussion of the best television shows you watch, right? Because while you're doing needlework, then it's guilt-free television because you're doing two things at once. You feel productive. So all the shows that the three of us have enjoyed while watching versus shows that do not lend themselves to needlework. So it's definitely worth listening to just for that. And you may have to pause and write down things and add them to your list. We all did as we were sharing.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah. So definitely do that. That was super. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah. The conversation spun right off the road into TV land. Yes. We had,
yeah.
Yes. Oh, and here's one I was thinking of Sunday for the comment section. What's the better sport to stitch by? Football or baseball? Football or baseball?
Okay. I will say, so I'm not going to talk about that, but I'll tell you something. So this is a funny habit. When I was in school, when I was in graduate school, it was during, we had these terrible snowstorms and we had really, really, really difficult exams. And so there was a period of time where there was a question as to whether or not like the worst exam of the year was going to be delayed because we were going to get 2.5 feet of snow. So all of us living in a house were basically glued to a television for 5 days studying, watching the Weather Channel. So ever since then, it has become a habit, especially in seasons like this where we have 17,000 hurricanes going on, to turn on the Weather Channel and just kind of put it on either very quiet or mute and stitch watching the Weather Channel.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
Especially during storm season because, yeah. You know, there's things going on. Because you don't want to watch it all the time because it gets really boring. But if you're kind of, you know, if you're kind of occupied elsewhere and then you just pop up every once in a while when they actually give you news about what's going on, then it really is kind of the perfect thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I assume that really difficult exam was difference between nouns and verbs.
Hey.
You left the door open. I had to walk through.
I think it's time to end the show now.
It could be.
With a very big sad face.
It could be the time, yes. It could be. Or on this end, it's not a sad face, and I want to continue and just to savor the moment. How's that? All right, we're out.
Realize how long we've known each other, right?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
We're out.
Take care, everybody.